You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And you didn't think we'd make it. We have made it to the final hour of our program. A lot of spring ball conversation, to say the least, with so many games last week and a number of them coming up. But probably the one we have not spoken very much about right now has been the Georgia spring game. Coach Kubelik saw the game and is here to report on what he saw with his own eyes. Coach Kubelik, great to have you with us. And all eyes were on JT Daniel and the defense, and you know, what would this Georgia team be, what everyone wants it to be? I'm going to kick my feet up and listen to your report on what you saw.
I'm going to give you sort of my one takeaway that I don't think a lot of people would really focus on of this Georgia football team, and we can get into some of the specifics with the guys that you mentioned. But the first thing that I noticed, Paul, is that this is a team that physically is going to be able to impose matchup problems on the majority of their opponents. They have guys that just don't look like normal college football players. And I'll start with Darnell Washington, tight end. My first question to Kirby Smart was about Washington because I thought he had a nice freshman year. And Kirby says, well, yeah, he's 280 pounds, maybe closer to 285. A 6'7", 285-pound tight end who caught four passes in that game, can stretch the field, can run, can move, is flexible, and by the way, is a willing blocker, which you don't get a lot with today's tight ends. They all like to flex out and play wide receiver. I mean, you look at Jordan Davis at 6'6", 350 in the middle of that defense. You put him next to Devontae Wyatt at 6'3", 325. Adam Anderson's a guy that's going to play star for them, which is sort of the alley defender, sort of a hybrid linebacker safety position at 6'3", 230. They have a cornerback in Amir Speed that's 6'3", 211. And, Paul, maybe the most beautiful offensive tackle prospect that I have seen in the last decade in Amarius Mims at 6'7", 310 pounds with a big old backside and a small waist and arms that seem like they go past his kneecaps. Matt Luke's got some talent. I mean, there's four 6'6", 320-pound-plus offensive linemen that could play for this Georgia offensive line. So just the physicality, the things that they offer from stature – are very different than most teams in all of college football. But I think this will be a very different football team as well. I got a sense of the comfort level that Todd Monken now has with the offense. JT Daniels knows it all. He can do things at the line of scrimmage. They have different options that they can utilize with a great tight end room. They're still going to have receivers back in the fall. They didn't have a couple of those guys in the spring game. A very deep tailback room. And obviously an offensive line that has talent but still has room to grow and needs to gel and needs some more chemistry before we get to fall. But, Paul, that physicality of just certain guys that they have in certain places will not be matched by the majority of their opponents. And now the fact that they have a solidified returning starting quarterback, who, by the way, when we met with JT Daniels for about 20 minutes, myself, Jordan Rogers, Tom Hart, we all agreed one of the most impressive player meetings that we have had in our 4 years together on the SEC network. I don't think people understand who this guy is. I don't know if there's a misperception or if people just didn't know him at all, hadn't spent much time in front of the media. He's not some California surfer dude that just plays football because he can throw it a long way. This is a very detail-oriented, organized football nerd. He is a football scholar. He lives it. He breathes it. Paul, he's telling us a story about how he took a couple of days in the offseason to go watch Alex Smith's 2017 film because he wanted to study his feet, and he watched every game. He went through his film schedule with us during the season, and I've never heard anything like it from another college quarterback. So Kirby Smart has a guy on his hands that brings a lot more to the table than just being accurate or having a strong arm or having a nice pocket presence. Mentally, I think JT Daniels is going to be much further ahead of the curve than a lot of people believe.
Cole, so many people have jumped on George Pickens being hurt as maybe the reason why the Dogs can't fulfill the expectations. You've already given me a bunch of reasons why that may not be the case, but let's flip over to the other side of the ball, the defense, which last year was one of the problems because of injuries. What's your sense this year?
There are some concerns. I think it's fair to say corner is not necessarily a strength of the team right now. Would not be surprised to see Kirby Smart and his staff maybe dip into the portal and try to find someone with a little extra experience. You obviously are going to bring in a safety from West Virginia that has some playing experience that'll be able to help bolster that secondary a little bit. But it starts up front with that defensive line. And, Paul, they have enough bodies that are going to be able to generate problems that I think they could offset some things on the back end for the first half of the season. And let's be frank about this. If they found a way to get past Clemson, I don't care if you and I are playing corner. They should not lose another game before the SEC championship game. That's just what that schedule is, how it looks, based on what both sides are going to be bringing back and what they offer. So I think, number one, the offense will do more to protect the defense this year. They're flat out going to put more points on the board. That's just real. That is going to take place. I think the George Pickens concern is valid because you just don't have a lot of guys like him. George Pickens is an eraser. He is a matchup nightmare. He is a guy that he can go peel the ball out of the air. Not a lot of receivers go attack the football the way that he does. He can be a difference maker. But I think with the numbers that are back, they can offset it along with those tight ends as well. And some of the other good news that we got from Kirby Smart was that George Pickens is adamant about getting back before the end of the season. The staff wants him to do it. He wants it to do it. And they're going to do everything they can to get him back for that home stretch. And again, go to that schedule. If you could say get a George Pickens back the last 3 weeks of the regular season and go 10, 12 plays, 15, 20 plays, and then maybe 30 plays, all of a sudden you've got him pretty much full speed for an Alabama in the SEC championship game and then maybe a playoff run, well, your offense just became very different for those last 4 or 5 games that you're going to play. And I think that George Pickens could be a guy that you don't have a ton of film on him from that season, but he's been added into that offense and could be a difference maker. But Jermaine Burton's going to be back. Justin Robinson will be back. Rosemary Jack Saint will be back. And I think you've got a guy in A.D. Mitchell, who's a freshman that not a lot of people are talking about, that has some twitch, has some juice, is one of the hardest workers on the team. JT Daniels, when we asked him about him, he said, guy did not miss a passing session the entire offseason. That's the kind of worker he is. Kirby Smart praised him. Todd Monken praised him. And, hey, Demetrius Robinson made some plays in the spring game, a guy that I feel like we've been waiting on for 5 or 6 years, even though he transferred from Cal just 2 years ago, to step into a Georgia uniform and make some plays. The numbers will allow them to offset the Pickens loss, especially with what that schedule is early, and particularly after Clemson. And if you look at Tennessee, Charleston, Southern Georgia Tech, if you could boost your offense with George Pickens and just go maybe 20%, 40%, 80% in those last 3 games, all of a sudden you could be a very different team once the postseason rolls around.
Cole Kublik with us. Cole, let me switch over. I realize where you were, but I also know you keep up with literally everything. Let me begin with Auburn, because you're so plugged into that program. What are you hearing, not so much even about the game, but about the camp and where this program sits right now under Brian Harsin?
Well, I hear that the buy-in is very real at this point. But, Paul, you and I both know that we're not going to truly be able to judge buy-in by the players until we see how games look in probably 3 to 5 games. And if there's not a lot of mistakes, if there's not a lot of blown assignments, if the effort is there, then I think even if they're not winning or dominating games, we can say, okay, this team looks bought in. They look like they're locked in. They believe in what Coach Harsin is saying, what he's preaching, what that staff wants them to do. There are plenty of holes to fill. I'm not going to try to sit here and convince you that they're more talented than a lot of the teams they're going to play, or they're going to be just fine in a lot of different positions. They have a quarterback of experience. He has a lot of growing up to do. He needs to become more presidential. He needs to understand the position of playing quarterback better going into the next season. We saw a little bit of that in the spring game. I also think the fact that he's got a Mike Bobo and a Brian Harsin who have played it, coached it, and coordinated it to help him grow a little bit, help him become the guy that leads that team. I want to see the body language improve. I want to see the interaction with the teammates improve. Those things are vital as far as being a great quarterback at the college level. I think the young group of receivers will be okay. It's going to go with Tank Bigsby. I mean, he'll be the guy in that offense. Sean Shivers can help. The offensive line is not one that's going to be dominant in the SEC. However, with that stretch play in the mid zone play and the inside zone plays that they're going to give you that they can build upon with play action and different things. That will open up and that will ease some of the stress that that offensive line has seen the last few years. I think the kids are having fun playing for Derek Mason. He's going to have an attacking style on defense. They just got a J.J. Pegues, 6'2", 300-pound tight end that's quick. You'll be able to add him in, do some different things. A very good group of linebackers. But I know they want that team stronger. I know they want that team better conditioned. And they know they need to add some depth at certain spots if they're going to compete over the course of the season. So I think what you'll see with Brian Harsin, Paul, I've told a lot of people that have asked me, consistency. That is the number one thing that I think will change at Auburn over the next 3 to 5 years. They might not reach the same peaks and plateaus as Gus Malzahn did, but I don't think they'll go as far into the valleys in certain years, certain games, certain halves, or certain possessions even, when that football team is operating the way that he wants them to. He is laser-focused, he is dialed in, and he's going to demand more from a lot of those players. Some might not like it, but in the long run, I think he'll have things figured out and Auburn will get back on track.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Cole, before you go, and I know Harsin, you know, is certainly one of the new coaches, but of the schools that really had terrible years last year, and there's a lot that really struggled. Do you see anyone at the bottom, the bottom fourth of the league, you know, making dramatic leaps and bounds this year, or do you think it's just that difficult to move up in the SEC?
I don't think it's that difficult, Paul, because I think the middle of the pack is very different right now. And I think that that part can actually change from year to year. Now, the top, the tippy top, probably not going to change a whole lot. I think you could see more movement in the East than the West. In the West, however, I do see LSU making a big jump. I think you've got a great quarterback conundrum on your hand with Miles Brennan and the guy that I thought was going to win it, Max Johnson. Both guys have proven themselves. Both guys have played a lot. I mean, keep in mind that the talent base at LSU is in place to go win games. You have quarterbacks with experience. Keyshawn Boutte, by the way, at wide receiver, has more receiving yards in a game than any player in the history of this conference. Drake Jenkins is a guy that I think is going to be able to help outside. You've got talent at tailback. Majority of the offensive line is back. I think Ed Ingram has a chance to be the best guard in the SEC, especially if Kenyon Green bumps out the tackle at Texas A&M. Deculus at right tackle has been playing for like 8 years. You got a Harvard graduate playing center that did it for him last year. So the experience is there up front. They're going to get back to doing some things that they did under Joe Brady as two of his disciples now take over the offense. That side of the ball should be fine. And people are worried about defense, but I think a lot of the issues on defense last year started at the top. It came from the structure. It came from the calls. The talent's going to be there. Allie Gay can get to the quarterback. Olajari can get to the quarterback. You've got multiple interior defensive linemen that have played well in this league. I think Damone Clark can have a good year at linebacker. And keep in mind, the best, maybe the best football player in the nation returns at corner for LSU in Derek Stingley. Cordell Flott and a few others who have played will also be back on that side of the ball. LSU's going to make a jump. How big? That's probably going to depend on how much everybody can get on the same page with the new coaches that are there before the season begins. And I would say watch Kentucky and Missouri in the East. Kentucky, obviously, I had higher expectations for them a season ago, but they return a lot on defense, and Brad White is by far the most underrated defensive coordinator in this league. Had a couple of seniors that decided to come back and play another year. The front seven's going to be stout, and they're still going to have a great offensive line, even though Drake Jackson leads. You got Darren Kennard back, Landon Young going to be back. and you got Christopher Rodriguez, an underrated tailback that can get it done. The two transfer receivers, if those guys show up and can play, Paul, if they can get things done down the field, and either Joey Gatewood or Bo Allen, I think it's going to be Bo Allen who can push the ball down the field in more of a pro-style offense, Kentucky could extend next year. And I just think Eli Drinkwitz has got something up his sleeve. I like the staff he's put together. I think the kids enjoy playing for him. I think he's a bright football mind. And where they were last year, I do not believe is indicative of how he's handling that program and how he'll coach that football team in the future.
Fantastic conversation, as always, with Cole Kubik. Cole, many, many thanks. We are going to head to the break here. We still have Field Yates later on the NFL draft that is just around the corner. And before we do that, we will get to your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back here. Final hour of the program. Appreciate Cole dropping by. Let's check in with Logan, who is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Paul, you know what time of year it is? It is time to overhype Georgia like we do every single year. It's just the weather's warm. Georgia's going to compete with Alabama. Their quarterback's unbeatable. And then they'll win 11 games and lose in a Sugar Bowl they don't care about. I'm used to it. It's been living in the South for 20-something years now. But I don't know. What do you think? You think this is the big year? Or you think it's just going to be Mark Richt 2.0 again?
Well, I'm not convinced this is going to be a championship year, but you know, one of these years we'll all be wrong, right? I mean, we've been saying this for 40 years.
Yeah, they like to say they've been doing it. They're a football program. They're the powerhouse. But, yeah, I think Jimmy Carter was in the White House the last time they sniffed one. Just wanted to say that, Paul. Georgia, keep losing those two key games every year. Cox by 90. Have a good one.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to remember if 80 season. Yeah, you're right. Carter was still in the White House. Reagan didn't take over till 81. Well, we have a Democrat, so maybe there's that commonality. Let's check in with Bill, who is calling next. Hey, Bill. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Bill, we're doing well. Thank you.
I heard the funniest story this morning on Jock's radio here in Birmingham.
And what was that?
Ohio State apparently played tag football this weekend.
They played flag football?
Or tag football. There was no tackling in the spring game.
Well, Bill, there's some, that's interesting. There was no tackling in the last game they played either against Alabama.
Well, that was exactly the comment one of the other guys made. So,
okay.
I just thought you'd get a big kick out of that. I wonder if we could get Jeff from Columbus to confirm that.
He's probably too busy. He's over at Lowe's checking the price of lumber.
Yeah. Well, he's building those high rises there in Columbus. So.
Well, I did not realize that. I have no idea why they didn't do it. If you're going to have a scrimmage play, if you don't want to, I mean, everyone did not have a spring game. Florida didn't have one. I don't think Kentucky had one. I'm not sure Missouri had one.
It hasn't been confirmed, but that's what the guys on Jock's radio said this morning. I thought it was pretty humorous.
Well,
that was exactly the comment. One of the guys said they might have been sore from the national championship game. So.
Well, those guys are among my favorites, so I keep listening. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Let's check in with Tom, who is in Alabama. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Tom, we're doing pretty well. What about you?
I'm doing fine. I watch your show every day. It's sort of the highlight of my day. I wonder how you think Alabama's baseball team could do this year. Did Magadan turn pro?
I believe he did, yeah.
And do you know who he played for?
Let me look it up. I remember talking to him a million times, and I cannot tell you where he is right now, but we will get you an answer on that. By the way, what a weekend it was in baseball. I caught a lot of the games, especially the one in Starkville, the ones in Starkville, and that was an amazing, amazing series. Hey, thank you for the call. I'll double-check on that for you. Let me check out Ricky who is in Mississippi. Hello, Ricky. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing well.
I was just thinking about that state series with Ole Miss. That was a great series, man. I tell you, man, he is something else. He's kind of, you know, Kumar Rocker-like, wasn't he?
Yeah. You know about the game on Saturday?
That was
shut down silly, wasn't it?
Really. But that was that whole series was just the atmosphere, the crowds, man. I mean, it was electric, man. I tell you, I really enjoyed that series. I'm glad we won. But anyway, I want to talk about the spring game as well. I wasn't that impressed. I don't really take into spring games all that much, you know. I am a little concerned with offensive line. I think that's going to be their problem next year if they don't. You know, I think the defense is going to be okay. I like Jack Abraham. I've seen him when he played at Southern Miss. I thought he did pretty good. You got some experience in a backup quarterback, which is valuable in the SEC. And that's my only concern. I think Jaden Wally, I don't know what's his status. I don't know what really happened to him. I thought he was going to be a star, man. He's pretty good. He did well as a freshman last year, that wide receiver. So
I think we're going to try to talk to Coach later in the week. I feel it's not because of what that. Now I don't buy what the FPI guy said the other day, but I think State has a bounce back though.
I think they're going to have a decent year, but I mean, I just think that I think they're going to be, you know, they're going to get into the system more, and you got some guys that's, you know, there's some transfers that's, they may do okay, but I'm just really concerned about that offensive line because I think that's kind of what hurt them a lot last year. I mean, when the quarterback don't have time and they can't operate the offense, you know. So I think that's my concern as far as the offensive line. Maybe we get some of Georgia's offensive line, and maybe they can give us some a couple of years. They're going to be highly talented, right?
So, Ricky, what do you think? If you're not buying 8-4, what are you buying?
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Eight and four. I don't. That's a tad bit too high. You know, I can live with 7-5. I mean, seven and five maybe. But I just don't know about 8-4, man. That's a tad. And that means they're going, you know, because they have a gauntlet, man, after those three games I mean, they can put that LSU, Alabama, and Texas A&M. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The schedule is a little bit interesting in that. I mean the non-conference game. I'm looking at it. I just grabbed the schedule. Yeah, La Tech and NC State. I think they'll win both of those games in Starkville. But you know, the Memphis game concerns me. That is
right. Memphis always. I mean, ask Ole Miss about Memphis.
Yeah, yeah, and I know this being, you know, growing up a Memphis fan, that when nobody cares, when State doesn't care about playing Memphis, you better watch out, because their, I mean, I wouldn't say it's their entire season anymore, because that program has progressed, but that's a big game for them. It's much bigger than it will be for State.
Yeah, really. Yeah, you know, so, yeah, but I think the defense will do well, but I just, because they got the back end is pretty strong, you know. Those guys are pretty good, but I just don't know about the offensive line. I hope they can shore that up.
Well, Ricky, it's always great to talk to you, my friend. So you hang
right,
in there, and
later,
let's talk soon. Always good, Ricky.
All right.
And Ricky,
right.
Don't lose that number. It's the only one you'll have. We will take a break. More phone calls at 855-242-7285. Field Yates right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we continue final 30 minutes of our Monday show. And always great to have our friend Field Yates on. Loved listening to his breakdown of the draft. He does it in such a unique way that to me is different than anyone else in that platform. Fields, thanks for being here. And here we are. We're finally... I mean, you've been talking about this forever. We can at least see, we're within the seeing distance of the draft, and there seems like the same questions keep getting asked, but you know, because you've worked for NFL clubs and you followed it, what are you focusing in on right now, maybe, or are you expecting the unexpected?
Yeah, Paul, you know, it's funny. What I really want to do is petition the NFL to move the draft up by about 3 weeks next year, because we've reached the point where not just those of us who are consumers of the draft that watch it and analyze it and study it, but teams themselves are ready for this thing to begin, because we've reached the over-analysis point of the pre-draft process. But there are still some question marks that I think need to be answered, and at its core, the draft is either going to start at pick 3 or pick 4. I still believe, as we sit here on Monday, April 19th, that Mac Jones is the favorite to go to the 49ers third overall. And I understand that there has been public sentiment suggesting that Justin Fields could be a better fit, or that Trey Lance has more upside and he would do well with a year of tutelage behind Jimmy Garoppolo in this Kyle Shanahan offense. But we had some really smart people, including, and I will mention this most especially, Adam Schefter, suggesting that the winds were sort of blowing in the direction of Mac Jones shortly after that trade up from San Francisco to move from pick 12 to 3. I think Mac Jones remains the guy they have their eyes on. And then at pick 4, the fundamental question the Falcons have to ask themselves is, we've got a 36-year-old quarterback in Matt Ryan. Do we want to take another quarterback, whether it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields, or maybe Mac Jones, and envision a future with one of those players as our signal caller? Or do we want to take a player in Kyle Pitts that I don't need to explain to you, Paul, is the most unique tight end we've seen in at least a decade, and maybe in something like 25 or 30 years, an athletic freak, a guy who could eventually emerge as one of the two or three best players at his position? And if you look around this draft, how many guys can you say that about? How many players in this year's draft can you say, hey, the best case scenario for this player is he becomes, within a reasonable time frame, one of the two or three best in the NFL? So I think 3 and 4 are the real question marks to begin the draft.
So interested in asking about what happens with these clubs, and in no way, I have so much respect for Adam and all these guys that report like you on the NFL, but I also want to look at it from a reporter standpoint, which is something I used to be. And Fields, I want you to take us on the other side of it, having worked for NFL clubs, and I know there's a lot of communication, but we're talking about things that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. How much free-flowing information is really coming from these clubs? Where is it, or is it coming from agents? I mean, I'm really curious, where does all this information that we get and disseminate and bloviate about every day come from?
Yeah, it's certainly a little bit of a grab bag. You've got all sorts of people that you're talking to during this pre-draft process. I think why we can speak with a bit more confidence about the Mac Jones to San Francisco thought is we know San Francisco moved up to get a quarterback. So it's not like they moved up for the opportunity to select Kyle Pitts, or if there was a, you know, a Chase Young or a Joey Bosa type prospect available as a pass rusher that you would consider a move up for. So it's no mystery the position that they are considering. And I think the reason why we have a bit more clarity here, or a bit more momentum pushing us in one direction, is because we know Trevor Lawrence is going number one, and we have excellent suggestions and intel that Zach Wilson's going number two to the Jets. I would be stunned if he's not the second overall pick, which allows teams to speak a bit more gratuitously. And I don't mean that the 49ers or the Cowboys at pick 10 or the Chicago Bears at pick 20 are out here making phone calls to the media saying, here's what we're going to do, here is showing our hands. But when pressed for information, either those that have been involved in the situation in some way, shape, or form, or those in the scouting community that might have a feel for what the 49ers are likely to do, I think they just have a bit more confidence because of the fact that at this point, there's not a whole lot to hide from if you are San Francisco or somebody else. If San Francisco had not yet made the trade from 12 to 3, then there's obviously a lot to hide from. But the fact that they have already moved up into the perch of the third pick, I think maybe is one of the reasons why it feels like this year we have a better grasp on the first three picks than we do in normal circumstances.
And I think that's really a great answer. Overall, I'm asking you more for a composite, because I don't want to out anyone unless you want to. But how does this information flow from the clubs? Because, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was one of the times the Browns had the first choice. I mean, nobody had any idea what they were going to do.
Yeah, that was John Dorsey, the general manager still at the time. And that struck me that particular year as one where the Browns had an idea early of which quarterbacks would be in the mix for that number one overall pick. But until they had gone through the full pro day process, which of course comes on the heels of the combine, which we had that year, and obviously all the games that were played that year, until they had that final sort of pro day and private meeting and dinners with these respective quarterbacks, they hadn't quite decided they were going to go Baker Mayfield versus, for example, Sam Darnold, who was the second quarterback taken that year, third overall. So, you know, obviously it depends on which club you are trying to gather information from. And some clubs have a much more collaborative effort during the pre-draft process. And you may be talking to a scout in a particular region, and you may know that that scout works for a team where his opinion is not just valued, but often leaned upon. Other teams have a very tight circle, and that's not to say that one works better than the other, but there are certain organizations that, whether it's the pre-draft process or anything that takes place throughout the football calendar, I'm talking about, you know, signing a guy off of your practice squad, you kind of know if it's not coming from this very small inner circle that you can't put 100% certainty or rubber stamp that information. But agents certainly have a lot of information during this time of the year because they represent these players and they're aware of what these players are doing during the pre-draft process, where they're training, who they're training with, which teams are calling them, which teams they're having Zoom meetings with, things of that nature. And then scouts are on the road, even if it's in a scaled back form this year, still enough that they are constantly mining people or mining relationships for information, whether it's with schools, whether it's with players themselves, whether it's with other scouts. So a lot of people have different kernels of information, Paul, that I think help you feel a little bit more informed going into the draft process. But one of my favorite parts of the NFL draft is when something happens in the first round that I'm not saying nobody has talked about, but not a lot of people have discussed in great depth, and it sort of throws a wrench in the mock draft plans.
Final question. We're short on time, but I have to ask you. You know, I mentioned the movie the other day. I think it was Draft Day with Kevin Costner. It looked like it's the insane, the most insane thing in the world leading up to that. I mean, you've been there, and you've been on both sides, of course. Is it that crazy?
Nah, I think that movie was great. It was a good movie, by the way, but it's a little bit more controlled than that. You know, I will say that there is certainly excitement before the draft. There is some anxiousness just because of the potential implications. You know, I remember being in Kansas City with the Chiefs when we had the fifth overall pick. That's a pick you got to nail, and we took Eric Berry, safety from Tennessee, who became an all-pro player and one of the best at his position. It worked out great, but the excitement leading up to that moment was still controlled. You know, it's still a job, and you're still in a very professional setting. So there's drama, no doubt about that. But that's a classic, not made for television, but in that case, made for the big screen movie there, which was one that I got to go rewatch over the next 9 days or 10 days before the NFL draft to get my juices flowing a little bit.
I hear it. Well, it's so great to have you on. So many things we could ask you, and we'll have you back if you have time. But thank you, Field. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and we will hopefully talk to you again soon.
Looking forward to it, Paul. Be well.
Thank you, Field. So smart. Just such. There's so many great analysts, but to me, Field having been on both sides, knows what it's like in the draft room. It's so interesting to get that perspective.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.